Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Before I go through opening remarks, there's no microphone system in this room. So one of the things that we noticed this afternoon is that it's important, particularly if you're at the lectern and your voice is coming this way, for you to speak loudly so that the people who unfortunately end up behind you can hear what you have to say. And so if there comes a point in time, I doubt seriously that it will be my voice that can't be heard. But if someone can't be heard, please let us know, because we want to make sure that everybody can hear everything that's going on. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the regular meeting of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, La Hutton Region. My name is Pete Pumphrey. I'm from Bishop, and I am the chair. I want to thank the members of the public for coming to this meeting. We do a better job when you participate in the issues that come before us. At this time, I would like to introduce the other members of the regional board: Don Jardine from Markleyville, Keith Dias from Rosamond, and Eric Sandell from Truckee. Dr. Amy Horn cannot be with us today. The executive officer is Patty Kuyumjin. And would you introduce the members of the staff who are with us this evening?
Thank you, Chairman Pumphrey, and good evening, everyone. Joining us from La Hutton Board are Lori Kemper, our assistant executive officer. We have our three division managers here: Mike Plasiak from our Victorville office, Chuck Curtis from the Tahoe office, and Doug Smith, also from the South Lake Tahoe office. To my left are Kim Niemeyer, our staff counsel, and Sue Genera, who is the individual you would hand your speaker cards to. Richard Booth from our Tahoe office is here. Jay Cass from our Victorville office. Patrice Copeland from our Victorville office, too. And Jan Zimmerman, also from Victorville. Carly Nielsen from South Lake Tahoe. And then Mary Fiorney Wagner in Tahoe as well.
Thank you. The regional board will be considering many items during this meeting. Although we must use our time wisely, we encourage your input on any item so that our decisions will be based on all available information. If you wish to speak on any agenda item, please fill out an orange card indicating which item you wish to address and how many minutes you need. Although we do not administer an oath in most proceedings before this board, we expect all statements made before the board to be truthful, with no attempts to mislead by false statements, deceptive presentation, or failure to include essential information. We also ask that you obey our ground rules, which are: treat everyone with respect. This includes board members, board staff, anyone who testifies, and your fellow citizens. This means no personal attacks and no violent, contemptuous, or disruptive behavior. In the interest of everyone's time, please communicate your ideas clearly and efficiently. So that we can develop an accurate administrative record, we ask that you speak only after you are recognized. At that time, please come to the lectern and speak to the agenda item. If you do not follow these rules or become repetitious, I may ask you to sit down. Any person aggrieved by an action or inaction of the regional board, including but not limited to the issuance, modification, or rejection of waste discharge requirements, administrative civil liability, or a cease and desist order, may petition the State Water Resources Control Board to review the decision. The State Board must receive the petition within 30 days of the Regional Board's meeting at which the action was taken. Board staff will provide you with copies of the regulations about filing petitions if you request them. They are also available on the State Water Resources Control Board's website. Our first agenda item this evening is public forum, and I have three speaker cards for public forum. The first is Mark Krauss.
Good evening, Chairman Pumphrey and board members. I'll try to be, I've never been complained of having a quiet voice, so I'll try to speak up enough for the whole room. I'm with Pacific Gas and Electric, and I'm here this evening to address you regarding our Hinkley remediation, chromium remediation project. I want to explain, we're here speaking to you tonight because we felt we're close, we're in the southern area. We're more than glad to come back and sort of update these comments in Barstow in May. I know we have a few members of the CAC here, the Community Advisory Committee, tonight, but here to cover three issues. One is PG&E's decision to petition the board's January 8th order, cleanup and abatement order. The second is PG&E's request for modifications, and the third is a request for consistent guidance, and I'll explain that in just a bit. The board's latest order issued on January 8th was the fifth in 5 months, and I think you know, we were speaking with staff the other day, it's in excess, we had counted 16, I think it's many more than that, but it's something we try very hard to track, and that's the consistent guidance issue that I'll bring up at the end. PG&E decided to petition this order, and I'll have to go into a little bit of the background on this to explain why. The nature of that order is to require that PG&E install additional monitoring wells for better plume definition, and that's fine as far as that goes. There are a couple of issues within this order that materially change, though, the terms on which we agreed to settle our petition from the 2008, or hold in abeyance, our petition from the 2011 cleanup and abatement order dealing with the whole house water replacement program. And so those issues are, first, the order would change from 2,000 feet to 2,600 feet, the well placement, the spacing between wells, used for plume delineation. So we're in a scenario now where, under this new rule, you could have a larger plume expansion, not by virtue of any additional detections of chromium, but simply because you've changed the metric for how you determine where the plume line is drawn. So that was one basis for the petition. The other is that whereas standard practice and your practice traditionally, and also language in the 2011 whole house replacement order, says that in that instance, if PG&E can disprove that a given detection is not, or disprove that it's from our historic operations there at the compressor station, in other words, this isn't our chrome, it may be naturally occurring or from some other source, then we're not required to provide replacement water to a given resident, or it wouldn't go into maybe the plume drawing. In this instance, it says the latest order prohibits us from using data more than 3 years old as evidence in making a claim about whether chromium is ours or not. So again, we're changing the underlying rules for what we agreed to just a little less than a year ago now, and that's the reason for our petition. We've also asked for a stay at the state board so that we're not essentially required to carry out that petition while this is being adjudicated, and it can take some time. So that's the first issue. The request for modification of the terms of the whole house order program generally, we're asking, and Patty addressed this in her executive officer's report, so I'm just going to touch briefly on some of the criteria, some of the issues we're asking about. We'd like to allow residents, if they choose, to decline the reverse osmosis system. These are installed in the house, often under the sink, and require monitoring under the order. We're also asking to have some relaxation of the monitoring, how frequently that should be done, because it's intrusive. We find that the residents are complaining that, you know, they don't want the RO system and maybe not the whole system because of that intrusiveness. So giving the residents the option to waive that RO system. We'd like the board to find that commercially available bottled water is acceptable and in compliance with the terms of the order. We're in a situation where you can buy bottled water at Safeway that, because of this order and holding us to the public health goal of 0.02 parts per billion, we are required to meet standards that no other drinking water provider in the state is required to meet. So we'd like to see that, at least say that bottled water that you can purchase at the store meets the objectives of the program. Given the low level of participation that the whole house water systems have had in terms of the number of people, many people are asking for buyouts, but the numbers that are asking for the filtration system is very low. So we'd like to go back, take a little time out, and go back and relook at some options like tanks, like trucking water in, those options that we had considered earlier, but we were concerned about issues of freshness, having to treat the water in the tank because of algae, other issues. And finally, like the board to recognize that the 1 mile buffer is very conservative, and that a given hit within that buffer zone, a well detection above 3.1, above background, shouldn't then push the plume boundary out yet another mile. That in some instances, staff should be able to decide that the plume boundary does not need to extend another mile by a single detection. And finally, the request for guidance has to do with a couple of experiences we've had. One is that whole house water. We've actually been given an investigative order and found in violation because of bottled water that we provided at levels of 0.11 parts per billion, because, again, this is commercially available. Sometimes lots will tick above the 0.06 that technically the order, a footnote in the order, requires we provide. We have been told in the past from your previous executive officer that available bottled water, commercially available bottled water, meets the intent of the order. So that was guidance we've received in the past, and yet here we have an investigative order. That's a consistency issue that we'd like to get resolved, and I think it could be addressed in our request for modification. The other issue was one that came up at a community advisory committee meeting the other night, and this was where one of the members of the CAC, who I think is here tonight, asked about if he were to strike up an agreement, our access agreement, that says PG&E can come on your property to install the filtration system. If he were to amend that, would PG&E still be forced to install the system, and if we didn't, would we be in violation? And he was told that we would be in violation. We had conferred with other staff at the board and been told that wasn't the case, that it was reasonable for us to require an access agreement be signed and unaltered. We've stripped our agreement down to just the very essence of access, so that there will be less, you know, no need to rearticulate all the terms of the program in that agreement. That will help resolve it, but we urge that that be addressed very soon, because the community heard that they can sign anything or not sign something, and we'd still be required to install the systems. We need to know that we're legally allowed to enter into the property. Okay? Unless there are any questions, that's it.
Thank you. There are two other cards for public forum that relate to the... Just a second, Mr. Krabs. To the same topic. So what I'd like to do is ask board members if there are any questions of Mr. Krabs. If there are comments, I'd like to take those up at the conclusion of all three presentations. But are there any questions of Mr. Krabs at this time?
No.
Mr. Dias?
Could I have some clarification on the last point you made regarding whether or not if a homeowner modified an agreement with you, would there be a requirement to install whole house watering? Could you explain that again?
Sure. So we provide an agreement that gives the access details. You know, we're allowed to enter onto your property in order to install the system. It also, though, recites many of the terms of the whole house water program. What period of time that we're providing that water for, and not beyond a certain period guaranteed. What happens if a drinking water standard, an MCL, is adopted. There's some other provisions that are really ancillary. If an individual strikes that up saying they're not agreeing to those terms, we have not been installing systems. So we're trying to meet you halfway by taking out as much as is unnecessary in that agreement as possible. But if somebody strikes it up and changes the terms of that access agreement, that's a problem for us. So we need an unaltered access agreement to be signed in order for us to enter into the property and install the system.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Sandell, any questions?
No, not yet.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Krause. John Turner?
Good evening, Chairman of the Board. Thank you for allowing me to speak tonight. We're here just because we heard that Mr. Krause was going to be here, and we'd like to have the opportunity to reply to whatever comment it is. My name is Darren Banks. I'm a resident of Hinckley and on the advisory committee. Since it's fresh, sorry, I'm the second comment card, so I kind of cheated on you. I apologize.
Yes, I see that.
The first thing, since it's fresh in my mind, I'll address what Mr. Krause talked about on the access agreement. Okay, what he led you to believe, the community has no issue with. Okay, the access parts. The parts that we have an issue with is PG&E placing on it that you will not be allowed to be part of the home purchase part, and the 5 years where they essentially say that they will take care of the system for 5 years, and depending on what the MCL is, and they leave it wide open to interpretation, that at 5 years they could essentially walk away from these systems. Now, very few people in the community can afford to upkeep these systems. I'm sure that you guys are familiar with them by now. They're very expensive. And just to dispose of the leftovers, it's an expensive fee. And we didn't put ourselves in that position. PG&E put us in that position. So, to leave that five-year thing on it is not appropriate. It should. They, essentially, what they've done is they've taken your order and added what they feel should be ruled on upon the community, not what the board has suggested. So that's really our argument with the access agreement. It's not appropriate. They should not be. No community member should be asked to take any rights away at all. Period. The reason that the home purchase thing is a big issue because it's a continually evolving situation out there. He fails to mention the manganese and arsenic. None of this stuff, the plume's not even, the 3.1 background study we know is shot out the door. We're working on getting another one done. So, and I asked you at the last board meeting in Barstow if you guys could look at that and kind of reevaluate and go back, because you guys took the high number on that study as opposed to taking a median, which I felt would have been more appropriate. You have people in my case that I have tests that show I had zero. And then all of a sudden, I got a little bit, and it gradually increased, and then it fluctuates, goes up and down. And just because it's not at that 3.1, it doesn't mean that it's not PG&E's responsibility, which is what I hope in the next 2 years, if your staff and PG&E continues to work towards a positive thing, we'll find that out through the USGS and the next background study. But they, with the whole house treatment, we spent a lot of time in community meetings constantly. They, PG&E representatives came and said how great this ion system is going to be. They brought the experts in that install it. Oh, this is a great system. It's not going to be intrusive. It's going to be fine. So far, there's only two up and running, those two, the people have had to deal with continual visits. So obviously, I don't know if there's some kind of issue with the system or whatever, but maybe they need to get a new company for the system, because I personally have a RainSoft system, and they come once a year to change the filter and to test it and make sure it's working right. Why their people need to come twice a week and that's the issue that the community has. It's not with the system. It's not with the clean water. It's with they're not following what they said that they would do when they initially told us about the system and brought it to the community. When the options were first brought out, they sat down with the community and said, okay, what would you guys like? And there was like a list of 10 that at the time the CAC members had came up with, along with Ms. Isaacson and the others on PG&E. Okay, and essentially PG&E took from that, and they chose what they wanted: the deeper well, the ion exchange unit, or you can do the pull out the purchase program. Okay, so from that one, the deeper well got taken off the table by PG&E. So there are issues in some areas with digging a deeper well because of the geology of it, but for the most part, there's no issues. They were worried about seepage from the upper aquifer into the lower aquifer. And, in my opinion, they're worried about having more data available in the lower aquifer, because I don't think that they really want anybody to know what's going on. So, they chose to take that off the table. So that left us with the ion exchange unit or the home purchase. A lot of people within our community would have taken the ion exchange unit if it would have been done the way that PG&E presented it to the public and the way it was done given to us over the year and a half that it started from discussion to end. They chose the method. They picked the people. They did their test study. They came back, said everything's great, the system's working great. They presented it to the community. And since then, only two are operational. Okay. I can tell you on the agreement, because I'm one of the ones that scratched out. I scratched out two things. I scratched the line out It says that I will not be part of I will not accept the sentence that says home buyout or the 5-year thing. That's the only part that anybody in the community has scratched out. Okay, and if somebody has scratched out another line, they didn't do it intentionally. Because those are the two things that we have the big issue with. Okay, so the statement that he told you is completely misleading and goes along with exactly how PG&E works. They give you guys information that's misleading and not appropriate. Okay, let's talk about the issues. The issues are that they're not giving us the ion exchange unit the way they said, and they have created the issues that have created the distrust in the community for allowing them to come on. A person doesn't want to sign their rights away for anything. All they wanted was clean water in their homes. So that's our big issue. On the I had this big, long thing because I figured he was going to bring up the petition. I'm not going to bore you with it. I'll give you guys a copy, and maybe you can post it on the deal. But, I mean, me being a layman, it's not difficult to punch holes in the petition. It's very petty and PG&E-esque. I mean, it's so as far as the only thing I will say about it, as far as the plume delineation and the wells, PG&E, the only thing that order does is fill in gaps. PG&E wants you to believe that we have this plume here, and then off over here, there's just this circle of a plume, and there's nothing in between. There's no chromium 6. That's not their responsibility, because frankly, they go back and they cop out on you guys and say, we're doing what we're ordered. They go back to the 3.1. So I wish that the board would relook their decision on that, changing it to the chromium 6 that they're responsible for. Because the truth is, there's no study that says it's okay for my 6-year-old to drink it at any level. And if I had it none, that's what it should be back when they get done with the remediation. So we need to continue allowing them to test the domestic wells, because that's how we've found out a lot of our data. You know, outside of their plume, we'll get a hit of 10 or more, and PG&E will say, well, it's an anomaly. Oh, no, it's not. You know, but if they're able to suck in the plume and it goes down to 2.8, that line sucks right back in. You know, so they use all of these cleanup and abatement orders to whatever suits them and however they want to do it. And
Mr. Banks, can I ask you?
Yes.
If you could wrap up.
Yes, sir. I'll be finished with you if I can just go ahead and give you guys a copy of what I wrote up on the, and it could be posted. And I'm done. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. And I should point out that public forum is a comment period, and it's not an action item, and I do appreciate and you're having come all the way here to participate in this and providing us this information. John Turner, going twice.
Board, thanks for having me. My name is John Turner, Hinckley resident. I think I've talked to you guys before, told you that 42 years out there in Hinckley. I just want to touch on some things that Darren said, and I apologize for the little mix-up there. He's kind of hard to control when he gets ready to go. So he was motivated, and I didn't feel like stopping him. So one of the things that I kind of go back to, and you guys have talked about the orders and the petition that came up. I remember reading in the EIR report about contaminated chromium, and that sticks out to me, contaminated chromium. How are we going to determine the contaminated chromium? We have a background study that is flawed, and we're using the high end, the 3.1. So we already know it's flawed. We all agree that it's flawed. We've got a new background study going in. But if you go back and you think about contaminated chromium, yes, there is chromium 6 in background levels. We all understand that. But how are we going to get back to the contaminated chromium? I've said it once and I've said it 1,000 times. If PG&E comes to me and can prove that the chromium 6 in my well is not theirs, they'll never hear from me. I understand that. I know that. I'm not asking for anything other than clean water. I'm one of these people who elected to get the filter system. In October, I believe, when the deadline was for us to sign up. Of course, you know, we got contaminated water, we have a deadline. We have the deadline to sign up for this filter system or what? I didn't understand that. Then I had to sign this access agreement, what it's termed access agreement. I complained. I said, look, I'll give them access to my property. That's not a problem. But I didn't understand everything else in it. Why would I have to sign something with everything else in it? It just doesn't make sense to me. Back in October, when I signed up for it, I understood there was a list. There's so many people getting it, so it might be a few months. So they told me by July or January. By January, I'll have my system in. It just got delivered last Monday. And only after I received a phone call from PG&E asking if I wanted to be placed on a request for 90-day period to determine if I might want to choose another option of the whole house water replacement program, which may be coming out, that hasn't been vented yet. Why would I have to wait another 90 days for clean water? Why is this 90-day request so important? I mean, the period so important. And why was it worded, would I like to be on the request to wait, like I requested to wait, to have this thing installed, because there might be another option that I may go on. I mean, some of this stuff just doesn't sound right to me. So I talked to a couple of residents out there. I have one resident, a neighbor, has their system all hooked up, ready to go. Just has to be turned on. Talked to PG&E. PG&E said, if we turn it on, you're not going to have any other options. This is it. So now they're kind of stuttered. They don't know what to do. They've been out there longer than I have. Nice old retired couple. They didn't want to sell. I visit them probably once a week, trying to keep them updated with what's going on. They're torn. She's tired of it. She wants to leave. He doesn't want to leave. But they need to get this resolved. And why is it put this way? Do you want to be put on this request to wait list? I just don't understand that. During this whole process, I became a CAC member in November. During this whole process, I'm still yet to hear of a long-term solution, other than the fact that if the ER gets approved and there's 50 years to get this cleaned up, is that our long-term solution, to get the contaminated chromium cleaned up? Is there ever going to be a long-term solution? Are these water filter systems a long-term solution? If they're a long-term solution, why are we signing for 5 years? Why are we going to have to think about this in 5 years? So, I mean, the Hinckley residents that are left, the ones who are living outside that dotted line, that mild buffer zone, are really paying the effects of all this. The schools being proposed to close next year. Enrollment, of course, down. So the residents that are left out there, what's going on here? I mean, everybody, it's just common sense over the last 4 to 5 years what has happened out there. You can see these plume maps and see all the yellow on these plume maps, PG&E property owned. This is property that they purchased. So, I mean, it's like, what's left for the community that's left? What's going to be there for the community that's left? Is there anything that we could do here? Or is there anything that we can do as a community together to help PG&E along to decide this, to figure this out? A long-term solution. If there was a long-term solution put in place, if there was a treatment plant, a water line coming in, I would guarantee you half the people that sold their property wasn't sold. That's just a fact. And I know a lot of these people. I mean, that's just a fact. So, them are just some areas I'd like for you guys to think about. I appreciate your time. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Again, I appreciate that it's a long ways from here to there. I appreciate your coming. Are there any questions of, I guess, really, I forgot to ask with respect to Mr. Banks, of Mr. Banks or Mr. Turner, first of all, are there any questions from any board members?
Have either of you seen the new agreement for access?
I did, and it's funny how that agreement came along, because that agreement didn't come along because of the CAC or board.
Does it remove the parts that you found?
It does, but it also still leaves the agreement open that either party can part ways. And so it still leaves, ends. It's essentially saying what they said in other terms. And, you know, I mean, that agreement didn't come along until we had an attorney to deal with them. That's the only way that they were going to do it. I mean, and that's just, I don't know how the community is supposed to work with them if that's how they wouldn't work. So, yeah, I actually read it right before I came in here because I got it emailed to me today, and I'd be happy. I think your board staff has it. So there's still some issues, and I think they're still trying to work those out. And I don't know what's going to happen from then. But the sad thing is it's had to get past this to this point that our school shut down and all these people have left, and people are going to continue to go frequently. Basically because that school was our center of our community. And it's a very sad feeling in Hinckley right now. You know, it's as if the community's gone. So, you know, if we could please work on these.
Anything else, Mr. Sandel?
No.
Mr. Dias?
No.
Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Dean. I don't have any questions. Are there any comments from any board member?
Mr. Dias? I wonder if we could hear a response from PG&E about the request to wait list issue.
Yeah, Board Member Sandel, I think it was intended as this is your opportunity to if you're going to change your election, we're looking at other options. So now's an opportunity before we install to do that. You certainly know the homeowners can choose to or not.
Was it described accurately that the request to wait list was to wait for some future possibility which was not identified?
I haven't seen it, but it is consistent with what we've applied to the board asking for, which is give us a 90-day opportunity to look at other options. We did it. We did a whole presentation to the community showing that we looked at a pipe system. By the way, a number of community members object to a pipe system because they end up getting a bill. I mean, there's, you know, creating a municipal water system creates certain issues.
Sure.
So there are complications around all of these. I mentioned some of the issues with tankage, with doing tanks, that you have to treat with chlorine or something else to deal with algae, and heat and other issues. So we looked at these issues. It's that a number of people, we were concerned about the low level of uptake. And, you know, I'm hearing, obviously, some of the intrusiveness may contribute to that. We are, I will add, though, we're trying to get these right. We're monitoring very frequently because we have serious, you know, violations at stake if we don't get the water down to the levels that are required here.
So your position is the reason why the contractor is coming in two times a week is because this is early days with new systems. You find it, you just want to be really cautious to see that everything's working correctly.
That is exactly correct.
And you expect that if we have 10 or 20 of these systems that will no longer be necessary to become proven. They'll come by once a month or something much more reasonable.
Both a greater number and over a period of time where we've got some experience with them, yes, because vendors give us representations that we don't know we can stand behind.
Okay, but that explains why they're coming by so frequently at the moment. Okay.
Any other comment, Mr. Sandel?
No.
Mr. Dias?
Mr. Jardine?
Thank you. Just one second. I'm sorry. Ms. Kuminja?
I had a question. This request to waitlist, is that in the form of a letter or?
I'll have to get a copy of it. I have it.
Could you share that with us?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Darren has the answer.
Yeah, I can.
Darren, can you please approach
sure,
so I can
sure,
get
that records? The couple that
John was talking about, I also spoke to them, and what happened was they called them. It was Mrs. Isaacson, and she stated that, and literally their system, they have the power. I went out and looked at their system. The power's on, the meter's running, everything's hooked up, everything's ready to go. She told them if they turned on the system that if there's going to be another option. We don't know what that's going to be yet. There's going to be another option. But if you turn this system on, you will not be eligible for that other option. Now, that's an issue in itself. If all they have to do is turn around and get it going, it seems to me that there's probably more issues than what they're leading us and you to believe with the system. I mean, they had their time to do their studies, their feasibility studies, and all the other stuff on the system. And that wasn't how it was approached to you or us, how that system was working. So, as he said, they had their time to get the knots out. I mean, but they chose whatever. So, when I call because I filled out the access agreement twice, crossing out. And then at one point I got a letter stating, and I believe your staff has a copy of it. I think I emailed it to him. If not, I can get it to him. Stating that because I have not made a choice, I will not be eligible for either program, the Whole House Iron Exchange or the buyout program. If this is incorrect, please call this number. Well, I called the number and said, no, this is incorrect. I signed the access agreement. So I signed another one, crossed out, and that's when, at that point, my attorneys got involved and through Drew Page, their attorney, worked out this new access agreement. And at this point, it's still not, because it leaves that open end of either person can walk away from the contract, it's still not appropriate, it's still not fair. And so Aaron from the PG&E Community Office stated to me, he said, look, I just got to ask, would you like to do a 90-day delay? And I said, for what? And he said, well, you know, I don't have to tell you, which he doesn't. And I said, no, I want it in. And I was supposed to be scheduled for the hydro testing months back, and they just flat didn't call me. Essentially, it was because I didn't meet what PG&E's standards were. Not the water boards, but PG&E's. You know, it's appropriate for the community to sign an access agreement that says, look, and I've stated publicly in front of board members, you have access to my property. An access agreement says, look, you're welcome to come on my property and do the work that you need to do. I understand that I can't go in the building, whatever, the basics. But they have to put all these stipulations in that takes away the rights. And there's a lot of people out there that just don't understand. And so, I mean, that's the issue.
I think so. It's not a letter, but it's a verbal.
It's a verbal. They have not sent any letter. I'm sorry. You know me. I'm kind of
a blowhard.
My only comment would be that I would hope that we could ask staff to take a look at these documents and particularly review them to sort of compare them with what's in the order. And what, if any, issues are presented by the documents relative to the ability to implement the order and assure compliance with the order and then come back to the board with information about what issues, and to the community and to PG&E, and perhaps try to meet with the community and PG&E and see whether or not any of these issues can be ironed out without having them have to be presented to the board.
Chairman Pumphrey, I just wanted to add that PG&E did come to me at one point asking me to comment, look at their access agreement, and I intentionally did not want to comment on their access agreement. I didn't feel that it was appropriate for us to get into the middle of it, and we definitely have encouraged the parties to work together to come up with language that they could live with. Part of the issue is that we are not involved in the property purchase program. We don't want to become involved in the property purchase program. It's completely out of our jurisdiction. So we've been walking a fine line, you know, understanding that PG&E has legitimate needs for an access agreement, understanding that the community has concerns about the access agreement, and trying to be there somewhere in the middle. So it's we purposely have tried not to wade too far into that. The other issue is that we don't have the ability to dictate the method and manner of compliance of how PG&E is going to comply with our whole house replacement water order. We tell them you have to do that. We told them it has to come out of the pipes, but we couldn't really tell them how to do it because that's not our ability under the water code. So we're in a strange place in the middle, but we're hopeful that we've been able to create pretty good dialogue, and it sounds like PG&E's been responsive in terms of coming up with another access agreement. And as to the open-ended nature, if you want me to comment on that, I can also.
What I really would, I appreciate very much your comments about the limitations that the board may have in terms of its ability to resolve each and every issue that might potentially be raised by this or any other agreement. So my hope would be that we could ask the staff if they could give us an indication as to whether or not there are parts of the agreement that seem problematical within our jurisdiction, and if so, to identify what those might be, and then to go to PG&E and try to be with PG&E and the community to work on those and to report back to the board as to whether or not there were problems found that we do have some jurisdiction over and some ability to work with, and what happened to those, and if there are others which we just don't. So that, you know, my hope would be that those things that we have the authority to work on, we would be sure that we worked on with the community and with PG&E. I appreciate your point.
Karen Pumphrey, I'd be happy to do that. We'll work.
Thank
Kim
you.
And I will work on that. And I heard you also like to ensure compliance with the order, which I think is important.
Mr. Banks, I'll give you 2 minutes.
That's fine. I think what you just said is absolutely appropriate and fine. But
what needs to happen is that PG&E shouldn't be allowed to use your orders on leverage to the community. And the damage that they've already done from doing and been able to do for so long has already created the damage. So a lot of people have already gone. The community is in disarray at this point. And so it's fine to do this moving forward, but I guarantee you they're going to come back to you and say, because of the issues of the public, we would like this 90-day stay in order to move forward and determine some type of other solution. Well, they've already had their opportunity. They don't deserve the 90-day stay. If they add something at that point, if somebody, whether it's trucking in water or whatever, fine, give them the 90 days to do that. But the order should stand as written, because that was their agreement with you guys. So that's all that I would ask.
Thank you. I appreciate it again. And as I said earlier, we have nothing before us that we can act on tonight. But I certainly think I speak for the board in saying that, you know, we would like to see what, if any, dog we have in this hunt, and to work out whatever things there are that we have the ability to be influential about. Thank you all. Item 6 on the agenda.